Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody, and I'm sorry if there was some kind of bizarre confusion. The show is starting with an hour and 35 minutes left of the stream. So we're reading the Hoffman Report. It was actually re-released on September 4th, and there's a sheet showing revisions of September 4th, 2015 to the July 2nd, 2015 report by Sidley Austin to the Special Committee on the Board of Directors of the American Psychological Association. The only change that would affect us is on page 12, and it's actually a quote in the article that I wrote also, and it says, the original text was the APA official who led this behind-the-scenes coordination with the Department of Defense officials was the ethics director, Stephen Banky, and the key DOD official. The key DOD officials was the ethics director, Stephen Banky, and the key DOD official he partnered with was Morgan Banks, the chief of psychological operations for the U.S. Army Special Operations Command and the head of the Army SERE training program at Fort Bragg. The revised text reads, the APA official who led this behind-the-scenes coordination with the DOD officials was the ethics director, Stephen Banky, and the key DOD officials he partnered with was Morgan Banks, the chief of the Psychological Applications Directorate for the U.S. Army Special Operations Command and a senior psychologist of the Army SERE training program at Fort Bragg. There we're going to continue, and I hope that you all can hear me and these technical issues are resolved, but we're going to continue on at the end of the section 8, on page 28. The last paragraph that we read was, some critics who have correctly alleged that APA government collusion led to the Penn's task force report further allege that APA's motives must have been based on the rationale for the Justice Department memo under which her harsh interrogation techniques are not torture if a psychologist or other relevant expert says the technique to be applied will not cause severe physical or psychological suffering. We did not find evidence that Justice Department memo rationale was part of the thinking or motive of APA officials. We cannot determine whether this was an important behind-the-scenes rationale for some government actors, but we did not see evidence that this rationale was discussed with or was an important consideration for APA officials. Subsection 9. Other issues in the task force report. Application for ethics codes. I'm sorry, if you just give me one second. Applications for ethics codes. We're on live now, just letting people know. Other issues in the task force report. A, application of ethics codes. As the July 2004 meeting at APA with CIA, DOD, and FBI psychologists, the precursor to the PENS meeting, CIA psychologist Kirk Hubbard argued that the APA ethics code should not apply to work by psychologists in national security operations, such as interrogations, because a code written for the ethical treatment of patients was not a good fit for this different context. There's a footnote 13. Former CIA colleagues of Hubbard's, Kirk Kennedy and Andy Morgan, told us that prior to this meeting, Hubbard had given them the opposite impression, that he believed the APA ethics code did apply and should be applied to the involvement of psychologists in interrogations. That Hubbard's belief was the one he described during the July 2004 meeting surprised and disappointed them, they said. After retiring, Hubbard wrote an article in 2007 that suggested that this was his position. Kirk M. Hubbard's Psychologist and Interrogations, What's Torture Got to Do with It? Analyses of Social Issues and Public Policy, 2007, at 2. So on page 29, that was footnote 13. The Penn's report, back to the Hoffman report. The Penn's report explicitly rejected this argument and noted that in its introduction that the ethics code binds psychologists whenever they take action as a psychologist and therefore applies to work on national security interrogations. The report also makes it clear in one of the 12 ethical guidelines that the ethics code provision prohibiting, quote, multiple relationships meant that it was unethical for a psychologist to both consult on a detainee's interrogation on behalf of the government and act as the detainee's healthcare provider. These were positive points in the Penn's report, and the first one constituted a refusal to go along with a position previously advanced by the APA's lead contact at the CIA. Although the CIA appeared to be effectively unrepresented at the Penn's task force, with the possible exception of Mel Gravitz in light of his substantial connections to the CIA. On the other hand, Behnke described these as clear and easy points to make, and we note that the DOD officials were not opposed to them. Subsection B, ethical obligation to detainee. The 11th Penn's ethical guideline says that psychologists have, quote, ethical obligations to individuals, end quote, who are not their clients, including, quote, to ensure that their activities in relation to the individual are safe, legal, and ethical, end quote. In making this statement, the Penn's report cites Ethics Code Standard 3.04, quote, avoiding harm, which says that, quote, psychologists take reasonable steps to avoid harming, others with whom they work, and to minimize harm where it is foreseeable and unavoidable, end quote. The Penn's report statement does not specifically mention interrogations, but the statement means that psychologists consulting on interrogations have an obligation to follow Standard 3.04 with regard to detainees. However, if physical pain and psychological distress do not automatically equate to, quote, harm, as some of these DOD psychologists said, then the failure to provide any specificity about how to determine whether interrogation techniques that intentionally cause pain or distress constitute, quote, harm, means that the standard 3.04 may not provide substantial protection. For instance, Banks' view was that some stress positions were, quote, safe, and therefore might be properly used as interrogation techniques. He cited the, quote, push-up stress position to us as an example. Similar, the Penn's report refused to take a position on sleep deprivation despite being asked to do so. Furthermore, and I'm on page 30. Furthermore, we found it highly notable that the Penn's report introduction omits the, quote, do no harm principle from its discussion of the key ethics code principles. The ethics code sets out aspirational principles, quote, to guide and inspire psychologists toward the very highest ethical ideals of the profession, end quote. The very first sentence in the first principle says, quote, psychologists strive to benefit those with whom they work and take care to do no harm, end quote. Remarkably, the Penn's report avoids this sentence and quotes instead from the next sentence, quote, in their professional actions, psychologists seek to safeguard the welfare and rights of those with whom they interact professionally and other affected persons, end quote. Behnke told us he could not recall why they did not include the, quote, do no harm sentence, but did not think its exclusion had much significance. Our conclusion is that because of the ambivalence within the DOD task force members about how to define, quote, harm as it relates to physical pain and distress, and the desire by bankies and banks not to take a hard and fast position that psychologists in interrogation situations can never, quote, do harm, despite the ethics code principle, banking intentionally left out the, quote, do no harm language. Addressing this issue specifically would have been feasible in a wide variety of ways, for instance, by providing a non-exclusive list of prohibited specific techniques or by describing prohibited conduct by using words such as, quote, abuse, quote, physically coercive, or, quote, intentionally inflicting physical pain or mental suffering other than mental suffering incidental to lawful sanctions, end quote. The decision not to do so reflects an intentional decision to keep the PENS report at a high level of generality at banks' request. Subsection C, access use of medical data. One allegation identified in media reports leading up to the PENS task force meeting was that physicians and psychologists were learning of a detainee's vulnerabilities, such as phobias, through his medical records and then passing that information to interrogators as part of the effort to try to break down non-compliant detainees. Notably, the PENS report does not deny psychologists access to a detainee's medical records. Instead, it prohibits psychologists from making improper use of the medical records, quote, to the detriment of the individual's safety and well-being. This was based on a request from banks, who said that having access to a detainee's medical records was important so that a psychologist would have the necessary insight to determine that a legitimate interrogation technique, such as providing a cooperative detainee with a candy bar, might cause health problems by seeing that the detainee was diabetic, for instance. No comments. Because of banks' request, the PENS report allowed this access. APA critic and Georgetown psychiatrist and law professor Greg Bush, who knew Benke from law school, lobbied Benke strenuously after the PENS report to change this, quote, no improper use provision to no access provision because of strong potential for abuse that could occur as a result of access to detainee records. Benke did not change it. Page 31. However, 1 year later, when a Guantanamo Bay BSCT psychologist sought a confidential ethics consultation with Benke in order to complain that BST psychologists' access to detainee medical records had recently been halted, Benke strongly urged her not to push for access to the medical records. And there's a footnote 14. BSCT is the behavioral science consultant team. Psychologists provided support to interrogation and detention operations at Guantanamo Bay and similar military sites. Behavioral science consultant team. But the rationale Benke associated was not exclusively an ethical one, but a PR one as well, that if the media knew that DOD psychologists supporting interrogations were pushing for access to medical records, even if for legitimate reasons, it would look horrible. However, when Banks took the same position within the Confidential PENS Task Force meeting, Benke adopted the position as part of the report. Benke and the APA's position on this issue, therefore, fits the pattern we saw in this investigation regarding PENS. Positions were taken to please DOD based on confidential behind-the-scenes discussion and with an eye toward PR strategy. The PENS Task Force, subsection D. Subsection D on page 31. Research. The PENS Task Research Report contains several recommendations that further research be conducted. This included a paragraph, quote, encouraging further further research to examine the efficacy and effectiveness of information gathering techniques with an emphasis on the quality of information obtained, Also valuable will be research on cultural differences in the psychological impact of particular information gathering methods and what constitutes cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, end quote. A subsequent section recommended that APA encourage psychologists to engage in research into, quote, methods for gathering information that is accurate, relevant, and reliable. Such research should be designed to minimize risk to research participants, such as emotional distress, and should be consistent with standards of human subject research protection and APA guideline codes. The evidence shows that Mumford, Brandon, Newman, and Gravitz made drafting suggestions regarding the research recommendations, and at least some of Brandon's drafting suggestions made it into the final version. Critics have pointed to some of this language as an indication that APA was intentionally attempting to provide ethical support for research on detainees at Guantanamo or elsewhere by the CIA or DOD, or was otherwise attempting to allow for research that involved harsh interrogation techniques without the proper human subject research protections. On the one hand, we found two notes in Banky's handwritten notes from the Penn's task force meeting in which the phrase, quote, research on detainees, or quote, detainees as research subjects, was noted. Banky provided no explanation for these notes, and we found no emails or other documentary evidence relating to them. In addition, in a meeting at the Department of Homeland Security about 2 years earlier, attended by Mumford and Brandon, one of the subjects discussed was collecting data relating to the detainees. Sources have told us without corroboration that there is evidence of CIA engaging in activity regarding detainee interrogations that would constitute improper research. Page 32. Further, ethics experts have told us that the language in the Penn's report quoted above was woefully deficient in terms of language that would typically be expected in order to communicate proper protections. And the language quoted above recommended research into, quote, what constitutes cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment in light of, quote, cultural differences is ambiguous, and so may easily be read to suggest that the research being recommended is to determine if interrogation techniques that Americans would find cruel, inhuman, or degrading may not be considered so bad by other cultures. On the other hand, we did not see evidence linking these recommendations to any actions by APA officials regarding research or suggesting that the recommendations provided authorization or assistance to the government to conduct human subjects research without informed consent. We noted that these recommendations are not within the Penn's report 12 ethical guidelines and therefore do not have the force of ethical guidelines for psychologists in a way that might be pointed to a justification for a psychologist's actions. We found that this is a topic on which it was difficult to draw clear conclusions. Our discussion and analysis of the evidence continues in detailed Penn section below. Section 10. Emergency action by the board. After the task force report was finalized on Sunday, June 26th, the board of directors acted in a highly unusual fashion to declare an emergency and to adopt the report as, quote, APA policy. So it's to declare an, quote, emergency and to adopt the report as, quote, APA policy, an act normally reserved for the APA Council of Representatives. The board was not required to take any quick action with regard to the task force. Banky had arranged for expedited approval by the Ethics Committee, and if there was a desire to formally adopt the report as APA policy, the Council of Representatives was meeting about 6 weeks later. But the evidence shows that the board acted in this unusual fashion, motivated principally by the desire of APA board members Ron Levant, the APA president, and Jerry Kuchar, the APA president-elect, to one, create a PR message that would be perceived as backed not just by a public statement, but by actual substance, a new APA ethics policy, and that could be used in a fluid PR situation perceived as negative, And two, curry favor with DOD, which had communicated that it wanted a prompt release of the report so it could use the report for its own purposes, which were both PR and policy purposes. Footnote 15. In addition to the intensive press coverage on issues of potential abuse of detainees during this time, the commander of the Joint Task Force, Guantanamo, was testifying before the House Armed Services Committee during the week of June 27th on the issue of detention conditions at Guantanamo. Reports of the hearing make it clear that the Pentagon was attempting to provide positive answers in response to concerns about abuse and improper conditions at Guantanamo. See Reuters, Democrats see, quote, whitewash of Guantanamo problems, June 29, 2005. A report from a third-party APA saying that psychologists could ethically be involved in interrogations at Guantanamo had the great potential to be a positive story for DOD. From its perspective, and the emails show that DOD was thrilled with the content of the Penn's report. Aside from the PR issues, the Army Surgeon General's office was in the midst of developing its policy for the involvement of psychologists and psychiatrists in interrogations based on Banks and Donovan's draft policy document. And this closely aligned, highly supportive report from APA was of great assistance to that effort, as the emails between Banks, Donovan, and Banky show. This is discussed in greater detail in the detailed Penn section below. Page 33. The New York Times had run an article on Friday, June 24th, the first day of the task force meeting, reporting that, quote, military doctors at Guantanamo have aided interrogators in conducting and refining coercive interrogations of detainees, including providing advice about how to increase stress level and exploit fears, end quote. The article quoted both Banky and the Ethics Committee Chairman of the American Psychiatric Association and compared the positions of the two organizations. Quote, while the American Psychiatric Association has guidelines that specifically prohibit the kinds of behaviors described by the former interrogators for their members who are medical doctors, the rules for psychologists are less clear. No commentary, but this is unbelievable. Quote, in a statement issued in December, the American Psychological Association said the issue of involvement of its members in, quote, national security endeavors was new. Footnote 16. Neil Lewis, interrogators cite doctor's aid at Guantanamo, the New York Times, June 24th, 2005. And there's a website where it's available through newyorktimes.com. APA President Levant worried that the article made APA look bad because it, quote, portrayed APA as unsure of where the ethical boundaries lie. Footnote, quote, 17 is an APA document. To Levant and Kuchar, managing APA's image required it to show that the task force report was more than simply a set of high-level, quote, loose statements that might be justified as a tentative, quote, initial step, but was instead a clear and, quote, strict statement of the actual ethical boundaries. The fact that the Penn's report was nothing of the sort did not stand in the way of their strategic attempt to create best possible media response. By the last day of the task force meeting, Banky had received information that an in-depth article by Jane Mayer on the policy and practice of aggressive interrogation techniques would be published in the New Yorker as soon as Tuesday, July 15th. There's a footnote 18, Banky's handwritten notes from or around the last day of the Penn's task force meeting, June 26, show that he received a briefing on the article from someone, presumably from Banks or Gels, who both had been interviewed by Mayer. His brief note says, quote, Mitchell and, quote, Jim Mitchell and the word S-E-R-E, among other things. And that's in the documentation. So he found out as soon as Tuesday, July 5th, and advised board members Kuchar and Anton, along with Anderson, Farberman, and Guilfoyle of this. In response, Farberman said it was that if the Penn's report was, quote, fully approved by the date, quote, we have very strong talking points. Without it, we're not in as strong a position. And that, again, is a footnote to an APA document. In addition, Behnke was communicating to Levant, Kucher, Anton, and APA management that DOD was very eager to get a copy of the Penn's report, especially with the New Yorker article due to come out. Banks wrote Behnke to express appreciation for APA, quote, support, supporting DOD in the report. Quote, I just finished with the Army Surgeon General, and he will be in front of the Senate soon on the issue. He is very supportive. Having APA support will mean a lot, end quote. And on that afternoon, on the afternoon of Thursday, June 30th, Science Directorate staff Heather Kelly informed Behnke, Farberman, and others that the Secretary of Defense, Rumsfeld, was personally waiting to receive the report on an expedited basis. Page 34. Rumsfeld's executive assistant will apparently be waiting by the fax for this. His super secret direct access fax line. They're just a tad interested. And that is footnoted to a direct quote from APA documents. That same afternoon, the board was sent the Penn's report, along with a note that the president, Ron Levant, was working on a proposal to the board. There was one significant board comment in response. Board member Diane Halpern, APA president in 2004, had, quote, one very strong recommendation, that somewhere we add data showing that torture is ineffective in obtaining good information, end quote. This prompted an internal staff email exchange in which Guilfoyle asked whether it was true that, quote, torture has been demonstrated to be ineffective. Behnke's response showed once again that his primary goal was to stay completely aligned with DOD. Quote, the task force did not make such a clear blanket statement, and my sense is that the task force may not have felt entirely comfortable doing so, end quote. In other words, because at least some of the DOD members were not ready to agree that torture was effective, Behnke wanted to block this board member's suggestion. For instance, Lefebvre's view from his experience with SERE was that waterboarding was often effective at getting U.S. soldiers in the program to reveal accurate information that was supposed to be secret. Farberman agreed, quote, hopefully Diane's suggestion is dead in the water. Footnote 21, which links to two different APA documents, presumably emails. In this context of vigorous media coverage and intense demand from DOD, President Ron Levant suggested to APA board members not just that it declare an emergency and act in an expedited manner regarding the report, but that it take action to actually, quote, adopt the task force report as policy, end quote. In an email to the board early in the morning of Friday, July 1st, Levant asked for the views of the board about, quote, declaring an emergency to adopt the report, quote, the emergency being that APA and psychology are getting pretty well trashed in the media and damaging our public image. Barry Anton had received the draft resolution that contemplated the board, quote, adopting the report as policy, and emailed Behnke with a, quote, concern. Quote, I'm not sure it can go out as policy without Council of Representatives approval. The board can certainly accept the report. It is, end quote. It is likely that the plan to declare a, quote, emergency was in response to Anton's concern that the board could not normally adopt something as APA policy since this was the council's function. By Friday, July 1st, without an in-person or phone meeting or discussion, but simply some short emails, all board members who responded to Levant's question had voted in favor of declaring an emergency and adopting the report as policy. some of the most long-serving board members and APA management members confirmed to us that it was highly unusual for the board to declare an emergency. One longtime executive said this was the only declaration of an emergency they could recall, other than a time when the board needed to take refinancing action swiftly in order to avoid an interest rate hike. Long-serving board member Kuchar agreed that other than emergency actions relating to financial situations requiring immediate action, such as the refinancing situation, or one situation many years earlier when immediate action was required to avoid a negative government regulatory action, he did not believe the board had ever declared an emergency in order to take a specific action. Page 35. In looking back on this board action, it was brought to our attention that under the Washington, D.C. law applicable to nonprofit corporations like APA, board votes taken outside of an in-person meeting require a unanimous written vote from all board members by sending in signed proxy statements. Not only are there no such signed proxy statements, but the APA has no records of all board members voting by email. Our search of APA's emails uncovered votes from 11 of the 12 board members, but we did not find a vote or email response from board member Jessica Henderson Daniel, who did not remember voting on this. Thus, it may be that the board action adopting the Penn's report as APA policy in 2005 was not a valid action of the board on procedural grounds. Subsection 11. Quick transformation of pens into strict human rights documents through misleading public statements as PR strategy. Let me just read that again. Quick transformation of pens into strict human rights document through misleading public statements as PR strategy. When APA made the Penn's report on public on July 5th, 2005, it issued a statement emphasizing that psychologists could in fact serve in consultative roles to national security interrogations consistent with the ethics code, exactly the message that was pleasing to DOD. However, this criticism was immediate, including a negative story to the New York Times on July 6th. The article pointed out the lack of specificity in the report and said it appeared to, quote, avoid explicit answers on key topics. The day before this, Banks and Banky had anticipated the APA would get asked. The day before this, Banks and Banky had anticipated that APA would get asked about the, quote, real issue, as Banks said, which they defined as, quote, what is the level of psychological distress that moves it into abuse? This was an issue Penns had intentionally avoided, as described above. Banky told Banks he would think about, quote, how to package the best response to this issue. The day of the Times story, Banky drafted a response letter to the editor for Levant, which was published in the Times over Levant's name on July 7th. In the letter, Levant claimed that the Penn's report contained, quote, strict ethical guidelines, and then repeated some of the statements in the Penn's report. From this point on, the media strategy was clear. Emphasize that Penn said that psychologists could not engage in torture or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment, and claim Penn's as a strong pro-human rights document. The principal purpose of Penn's, to state that psychologists could in fact engage in interrogations consistent with the ethics code, was relegated to the sidelines, since any message seen as pro-DOD or permissive regarding the involvement of psychologists in interrogations was deemed bad media strategy in light of the intense and quick criticism of Penn's. And of course, the principal motivation for Banky and other APA officials in drafting Penn's the way they did, pleasing DOD, remained fully concealed. These were misleading public statements, and this was a disingenuous media strategy. A document that was intentionally very limited, nonspecific, and evasive on the key issue in order to principally please DOD now came to be described principally as strong anti-torture and pro-human rights document. Page 36, Section B. Conclusions regarding secret joint venture between APA and DOD officials in years after PENS. From the time of the PENS task force through at least the next 3 years and through the end of the Bush administration, Behnke led the extensive efforts by APA to defend the PENS report, to beat back criticisms on the issue through public statements and interviews, and to defeat efforts by the APA Council of Representatives to pass resolutions that would have definitively prohibited psychologists from participating in interrogations at Guantanamo Bay and other U.S. detention centers abroad. In these efforts, Behnke effectively formed an undisclosed joint venture with Banks, sometimes joined by Donovan and some of the DOD officials who had served on the PENS task force, to ensure that APA's statements and actions fell squarely in line with DOD's goals and preferences. In numerous confidential email exchanges and conversations, Behnke regularly collaborated and coordinated with Banks to determine what APA's position should be, what its public statement should say, and what strategy to pursue on this issue. Before responding to an APA board member, before drafting a statement for APA president, before giving a news interview, before advising the APA Ethics Committee, and before crafting strategy regarding potential council resolutions, Behnke very regularly checked with Banks first to make sure Behnke and APA were in line with what DOD wanted, as articulated by Banks. On many of these occasions, Behnke was effectively seeking and received Banks' preclearance for an APA action or statement before Behnke proceeded. Subsection 1. APA-DOD close and secret collaboration on public statements and media strategy. Virtually every time the issue of psychologist involvement in interrogations arose publicly in an important way, when a national reporter would ask Behnke for comment or interview for an article being prepared, when Behnke would be preparing for an interview on NPR, when Behnke was preparing a draft letter from the APA president or other APA officials to be published or sent to an APA listserv for council representatives or other groups, to cite some examples, Behnke reached out to Banks to ensure that APA's statements and positions were in line with the military's policies and preferences and to coordinate what APA should say and how it should proceed strategically. Behnke was, in effect, the lead strategist and spokesperson for APA on this issue and worked hard to stay in control of every word that APA officials uttered on the issue. Our review of the contemporaneous documents and communications makes it clear that his closest partner and collaborator in this endeavor was Banks, joined at times by other DOD officials such as Donovan, James, and Shumate. Often there was a predictable pattern to Behnke's activity. Upon observing that APA would need to make a statement or issue a response, he would email Banks with a very short amount of time to seek his guidance or to suggest that APA take a particular an approach or use specific language, and then would ask Banks if Banks approved of or wanted to change the approach or language. Behnke shared with Banks and Donovan that APA's, quote, media strategy was to claim that APA's ethics position on psychologists involved in interrogations was very similar to the position of the American Psychiatric Association and the American Medical Association, and Behnke turned to the two of them, and Banks in particular, for assistance in crafting strategic messages and specific language that would help advance this strategy. Page 37. We saw numerous examples of Behnke partnering with Banks as a virtual joint communication strategy team for APA. Banks, too, used Behnke to help determine what DOD officials should say on the issue of psychologists being involved in interrogations. In one instance, the commander of the DOD Joint Task Force at Guantanamo asked Banks to draft a statement on the issue, and Banks turned to Behnke for drafting help. In another issue, Behnke worked behind the scenes with Banks to help DOD lobby the APA president on this issue. By helping Banks write a strong letter to the APA president after the president received a strong letter from APA members concerned about reports of psychologists being involved in abusive interrogations. In effect, the APA ethics director was secretly drafting a letter from DOD to the APA president to help DOD influence the APA's president's position on an issue. Behnke and Banks work to keep their collaboration highly confidential. In an email to Banks during one of the many instances in which Banks sought his review and pre-clearance of a draft APA statement, Behnke told Banks that, quote, discretion about prior review is essential. They titled numerous emails, quote, eyes only. And we found two emails in 2007, shortly before their email traffic diminished based on the emails in APA's system, in which they discussed ensuring that the emails themselves were securely deleted. Other APA officials were sometimes involved in these collaborations, such as Kuchar, Levant, Farberman, and Kelly. But for the most part, the email evidence of the collaboration with Banks and other DOD officials shows Behnke as the clear leader of this effort. Banks, Donovan, and other DOD officials thank Behnke profusely, called him a hero and their, quote, knight in shining armor, and shored him up when he took criticism. They invited him in 2005 to speak at the previously closed-off small annual conference for national security psychologists with security clearances to provide paid instruction at the Confidential Military Interrogation and Detention Operations two-week training course, newly created in 2006, to train psychologists and psychiatrists in interrogation support as described below. And then there's footnote 22. The evidence on file with Seidley appears to show that the payments, ranging from $1,250 to $5,000 per class, were made to APA, not Behnke, except for two instances when Behnke said he received the payments directly and wrote APA a check for the amount less his expenses, although there is some contrary evidence as DOD had Behnke's bank account information, presumably for direct deposits. Our investigation was still receiving evidence from APA on this issue at the time of report. Page 38. Bored about these activities, how does that work? Oh, there was a footnote. I'm sorry. So section two, Behnke as DOD contractor, providing training as part of BSCT. Remember, that's the Behavioral Sciences Consulting Team or something. BSCT Psychologist Interrogation Training Program. Behnke became a DOD contractor and from 2006 to the present has taught ethics to BSCT psychologists and occasionally psychiatrists, quote, in support of interrogation detention operations, end quote, at Fort Hoschusa in Arizona, the DOD base that houses the U.S. Army Intelligence Center. Banks and Donovan coordinated with him about what to tell and not tell the APA board about these activities. wanting to conceal some aspect of the tight partnership they had created in light of the criticism within the APA community on this issue. In fact, Benke never informed the board of his participation in the DOD interrogation training program for BSCT psychologists, his status as a DOD contractor, or the payments from DOD to APA. He did, however, tell his supervisor, APA Deputy CEO Michael Honecker, that he turned to Banks as an advisor from time to time, and that he was regularly giving a paid ethics lecture at an Army base as part of the interrogation training course for BSCT psychologists. Honecker did not provide this information to CEO Norman Anderson or the board. When Anderson learned from Sidley during the investigation that Banke had been providing this training as a DOD contractor, he appeared stunned and was visibly upset that the matter had not been discussed with the board. Honecker said that it did not occur to him that the board would need to know or discuss this information because he saw it as a standard example of Banke providing ethics training to an important group of psychologists, as he does in a variety of settings. Honecker and Benke claimed that the trainings were clearly revealed in the Ethics Office publicly available annual reports. But in 2006 and 2007, the reports only listed the trainings as, quote, workshops in Sierra Vista, Arizona, relating to the Penns Report. And beginning in 2008, they began being described as, quote, workshops on ethics training for military psychologists, end quote. The reports do not state that the, quote, workshops were at a DOD facility or the U.S. Army Intelligence Center or were part of the military's official interrogation training program for BSCT psychologists. Emails between Benke and Donovan show that this was done by design. Benke proposed to Donovan that he describe the trainings in his, quote, yearly report to the board with, quote, something simple, like, quote, trainings on ethics and interrogations, and, quote, Sierra Vista, Arizona. Donovan agreed he should, quote, leave it Sierra Vista and simple. And in Benke's annual reports in 2006 and 2007, he even removed the word, quote, interrogations. Section 3. Actual and attempted trips to Guantanamo. In late 2006 and early 2007, when a BSCT psychologist at Guantanamo Bay reached out to Benke and Banks to seek a confidential, in-person ethics consultation at Guantanamo from Benke about an ethics issue, it became apparent to Benke that the APA board might not support such a trip in light of the controversy within the APA ignited by Penns. Confidentially plotting with Banks about how to get the APA board to agree to let Banke's travel to Guantanamo, Benke ended up asking the BSCT psychologist to write a formal memo requesting his in-person consultation for a confidential ethics consultation. The psychologist did so and prepared a formal travel plan as well. However, at a meeting with the board, Benke was told that he could not travel to Guantanamo, but could provide the requested ethics consultation in the United States. Benke therefore offered instead to consult with the BSCT psychologist in Washington if an in-person consultation was required. The board's decision triggered a strongly worded email to three board members from Donovan, who had apparently heard that Benke's inability to travel was due to a board decision. Accusing them of being not interested in providing assistance to military psychologists and questioning their ability to make sound decisions to support military psychologists in light of the Penns report. When Banks inquired whether this had been, quote, destructive on, quote, Benke, Benke assured Banks that, quote, nothing could diminish, my commitment to continue to support all of your efforts and the efforts of the great men and women who protect our country and freedoms, end quote, page 39. There had been two trips to Guantanamo by APA presidents after the Penns report, accompanied by Benke on one of them. In October 2005, DOD invited APA President Ron Levant, as well as the president of the American Psychiatric Association and others, to a half-day visit at Guantanamo, as later reported in the press. And in November 2006, APA President Gerald Kutcher and Behnke went on a similar trip to Guantanamo. For the Levant trip, Behnke had arranged for Banks and Donovan to provide a phone briefing and talking points to Levant so that he would be, quote, on message during and after his trip. Behnke similarly had Banks brief Kutcher before his 2006 trip. Both trips consisted of meetings with Guantanamo leaders who provided positive information about the facility and detainee treatment. The trips were mostly PR trips for DOD, but after the 2005 trip, Assistant Secretary of Defense Winkenwerder and Surgeon General Kiley had a dinner with the group to discuss their observations and any concerns. Kutcher told us that he found the opportunity to see the actual Guantanamo facility and receive in-person briefings helpful. Upon his return, Kutcher prepared an extensive PowerPoint presentation with many photos provided to him by DOD showing the detention center and detainees' facilities. The presentation was very positive about the Guantanamo facility and its value, including a slide that highlighted the, quote, interrogation yield. Kutcher said that the slides simply represented what DOD had told the group and that he would orally provide this caveat when he gave the presentation. But on its face, the presentation is uncritical, highly positive presentation of Guantanamo. Subsection 4, policy victory. One of the key benefits that APA sought from its close collaboration with DOD was a positive outcome regarding the official policy DOD was developing on the issue of interrogations and the involvement of psychologists, psychiatrists, and other, quote, behavioral science consultants. And APA received exactly what it wished for, as DOD official doctrine and medical command policy explicitly provided a large role for psychologists and not as much for psychiatrists in the support of interrogation and detention operations, an outcome that clearly was due in substantial part to what was seen by DOD as very, quote, supportive position taken by APA in the Penn's report. Spurred largely by the draft policy document that Morgan Banks, along with other SERE psychologists in Army Special Operations Command and Deborah Donovan, drafted in and around 2004 to provide guidance and instructions to BSCT psychologists regarding interrogations and detention operations. The Army Surgeon General's office started a formal effort in late 2004 and early 2005 to draft an official medical command policy which would apply to all behavioral science consults involved in interrogations. As the executive agent for the administration of DOD detainee policy, the Army Surgeon General's office policy would cover the entire medical command. The draft document that Behnke had drafted by the first half of 2005 and which he distributed at the Penn's meeting became the official medical command policy, almost verbatim in all key respects, in October 2006. APA had learned of this policy development effort in early January 2005 as it was starting to put together the Penn's task force, and it was clearly one of the lead motivating factors for APA in selecting task force members and producing a task force report that would please DOD, page 40. In effect, APA assured that its ethics policy would be completely aligned with DOD's policy by, one, taking the key framework in Banks' draft policy document, safe, legal, ethical, and effective, and using it as the key framework in the Penn's report, and, two, following Banks' lead in all other important policy respects in the Penn's report. Banks' draft policy document thus became the basis for both the Penn's report and official DOD policy, making it a foregone conclusion that APA and DOD policy were perfectly aligned. In fact, the most recent version of the DOD policy, 2013, still contains the full PENS report as formal part of its policy document. While the Surgeon General's office was finalizing its medical command policy, based on Banks' document and getting approval from various parts of DOD, higher-level DOD doctrine documents were required before the medical command policy could be issued. The highest level of these doctrine documents was a DOD, quote, DOD directive, or a, quote, DODD. In November 2005, the Acting Secretary of Defense issued a DODD on, quote, intelligence interrogations, DOD debriefings, and tactical questioning, end quote. The eight-page document contains an explicit mention of, quote, behavioral science consultants assisting interrogations, an inclusion that was seen as a huge victory for SERE and other military psychologists. Right after it was issued, SERE psychologist with the DOD Joint Personnel Recovery Agency sent a congratulatory note to the team that helped make this a success. Banky, Banks, and two Air Force SERE psychologists. Quote, thanks to all for your hard work. We are now in an official DODD. The next step in DOD doctrine was a DOD, quote, DOD instruction on the topic, or DODI. In June 2006, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs, William Winkenwerder, issued a DODI that explicitly prioritized psychologists over psychiatrists in the role of, quote, behavioral science consultants who supported interrogations and related activities. The document provided that, quote, physicians, i.e. psychiatrists, are not ordinarily assigned duties as behavior science consultants, but may be so assigned with the approval of the Assistant Secretary of Defense in circumstances when qualified psychologists are unable or unavailable to meet critical mission needs. And in comments to the media about the new DODI, Winkenwerder explicitly mentioned that the, quote, clear support from the APA regarding the role of psychologists in interrogation, a reference to PENS, quote, influenced our thinking, because he noted the American Psychiatric Association had not taken a similarly supportive position. Twilight Zone. No comments. Okay. This was a very large victory for those who were focused on growing opportunities for employment and influence for psychologists, especially compared to psychiatrists. By winning the primary position with DOD regarding which mental health professionals would provide support for DOD interrogations, APA cemented its position with DOD in a manner that is likely to produce substantial employment and other financially beneficial opportunities for psychology. Section 5, Abandonment of PENS Casebook Plan. One of the key arguments made by Banky toward the end of the PENS meeting and for years later was the lack of specificity in the PENS report was necessitated by complexity of the topic and the fact that PENS was just a, quote, initial step in the process. The next step, crucial, he said, in the development of meaningful guidance to psychologists would be a, quote, casebook commentary that would be produced by APA with input from PENS Task Force and the Ethics Committee. The book was would provide examples of the kind of clear, specific guidance psychologists sought, he said. Several of the DOD psychologists on the task force were highly dubious that this was feasible or desirable, including Scott Shumate, who made his views on this plain. Nevertheless, Banky promised Mike Wessels that the casebook would be done in 6 months, a promise that was crucial for Wessels in signing off on the task force report. Page 41. Ultimately, Behnke did virtually nothing to pursue a casebook for years, effectively abandoning an essential element of his disingenuous claim that APA's development of ethical guidance on the issue would be a multi-step process. Behnke made the arguments to us during his interview that because the Council of Representatives began passing resolutions in 2006 that provided more specific guidance for psychologists, he believed a casebook was unnecessary. We do not think this is true, since, as set out below, Behnke was the lead APA strategist in attempting to manipulate and water down council resolutions to minimize the effect on DOD. The real reason there was no casebook is that there was never a real desire to create one, because it would necessarily create the same problems that specificity within the Penns report would have had, as APA staff had identified as early as 2004, drawing a line that allowed psychologists substantial latitude in supporting interrogations as DOD desired, created substantial PR problems. The only solution to this dilemma was to keep the guidance nonspecific. That this was actually Behnke's thinking is corroborated by the internal emails he sent in January 2011, when he finally created a 30-page draft document on this topic that was something well short of a book. The document contained, quote, vignettes and ethics committee responses. In sending the draft document to Anderson, Honecker, Guilfoyle, Farberman, and two others, he explained that, quote, our primary focus was to write responses that would not cause us any problems. He expressed satisfaction that there had been almost no discussion of, quote, this piece of the interrogation issue for some time, and said that his plan was to, quote, post this text quietly, very quietly, on the ethics webpage. Thus, 6 years after Penn's, the great promise of a casebook is the proper means of providing specificity and resolving the unavoidably, said Behnke, limited nature of the Penn's report, had shrunk to the form of a 30-page document intentionally created to avoid any, quote, problems, which were snuck into a corner of the APA website with the fervent hope that it would be entirely ignored. Section 6. Obstruction on Amending Ethics Code Standard 1.02. At the council meeting in August 2005, following the Penn's report, the council passed a motion instructing the Ethics Committee to explore adding language to Ethical Standard 1.02 to ensure that provision could only be used in a matter, quote, consistent with basic principles of human rights. That provision, as revised in 2002, provided if there was a conflict between a psychologist's ethical obligations and her obligations under the, quote, law, regulations, or other governing legal authority, which included military orders, she had to try to resolve the conflict. But if she could not, she could follow the, quote, law, regulations, or other governing legal authority without committing an ethical violation. The introduction to the APA Ethics Code, which was not binding, repeated this language of 1.02 and added the phrase, quote, consistent with basic principles of human rights. Council motion required the Ethics Committee to make a recommendation about whether to revise 1.02 by adding the language in the introduction, page 42. Behnke drafted a document for the Ethics Committee in September 2005, which the committee adopted, rejecting the suggestion that 1.02 be amended in this way. For the next 4 years, Behnke engaged in a wide variety of actions to intentionally delay and obstruct efforts to amend 1.02, despite increasingly clear calls to do so. Standard 1.02 was clearly a provision that was of importance to national security psychologists. Behnke coordinated his efforts at times with Banks and Donovan by, for instance, having them help to create, quote, opposition to the calls to revise 1.02. Ultimately, it was not until Council explicitly instructed the Ethics Committee to take action resolving the discrepancy between Standard 1.02 and the language in the introduction of the Ethics Code and set a February 2010 deadline that anything changed. As a result of Council's insistence, Standard 102 was amended in February 2010 to include the requirement that the provision not be used to, quote, justify or defend violating human rights. Section 7. Behind-the-scenes attempts to manipulate Council of Representatives actions in collusion with and to remain aligned with DOD. Finally, one of the most significant ways in which Behnke and the APA secretly collaborated with DOD officials was in Behnke's extensive efforts to manipulate Council of Representatives actions from 2006 to 2009, in an effort to determine attempts to keep psychologists from being involved in national security interrogations and to minimize the damage to DOD psychologists who might have been threatened from more aggressive potential council actions. Especially in 2006 and 2007, but also to some extent in 2008 and February 2009, Behnke became APA's chief legislative strategist, taking a very active and sophisticated role in manipulating the resolution process and the proponents of these measures in order to achieve this goal. Behnke was the authorized APA leader in this effort, and he was obviously taking these steps on behalf of APA. There were other APA officials involved with Behnke in these efforts, including at times Kuchar, Anderson, Honecker, Faberman, Guilfoyle, and in 2008-09, Ellen Garrison. Their involvement is discussed in detail section of the report, but no one was as thoroughly and consistently involved as Behnke was, and he was clearly, as one of the DOD officials said to him after he revealed some of his plans, quote, a superb strategist, a compliment to which he responded with an email wink emoticon. The pattern we saw from the evidence was that Behnke would use a sophisticated mix of strategies to either delay the passage of resolutions that would create negative implications for DOD or manage them so that the negative implications would be minimized. First, he would attempt to bring proponents of aggressive resolutions into the fold by, quote, working with them on their resolutions, a gesture with the appearance of support that would almost always taken at face value and accepted by the proponents. Once he began, quote, working with them, Behnke would act like a partner and teammate to encourage the view that he could help them achieve a good outcome. Second, Behnke would then use his very substantial language skills to wordsmith the draft resolutions in order to excise the parts that were negative for DOD and to substitute alternative language that appeared to achieve some of the proponents' original goals, but often achieved less than they thought because of nuanced drafting moves. Third, Behnke would attempt to convince the proponents that they should bring in the division of the APA that represented military psychologists on the theory that proponents should not want to be, quote, divisive within the APA, and that it was best to form a, quote, consensus. Fourth, Behnke would engage in active and sophisticated behind-the-scenes lobbying in both direct and indirect ways in order to ensure passage of the more moderate alternative he had crafted and to avoid a revolt in the direction of more aggressive measures. This even extended to his micromanaging when invitations for lunch with the APA president were issued to nip, quote, organizing in the bud, and where the invitees would sit for lunch during council meeting to increase, quote, visibility. In essence, Behnke's insight was that when faced with the potential for an aggressive council action that he viewed as negative for DOD, the best strategy was not to oppose it directly, but to create an alternative that can be seen as a middle ground with enough credibility to attract support from a substantial percentage of people who had otherwise supported the aggressive action. And through the mechanism set out above, he was confident he could manipulate the, quote, middle ground alternative to make it positive or tolerable for DOD. Behnke, in his usual highly confidential communications with Banks, as well as Donovan and James and sometimes Gales, in order to jointly determine what strategy or position was best for DOD, to seek pre-clearance of specific language, and to work on drafts of key documents together. The council did, in fact, pass resolutions in 2006 and especially 2007 that created additional restrictions on national security psychologists as a matter of, quote, APA policy, although these were not enforceable ethical standards, but they were much milder as a result of Bankey's intense behind-the-scenes manipulation done in close coordination with DOD officials such as Banks. While these two resolutions were being drafted and prepared for council's consideration, Bankey engaged in a two-pronged approach. One, engage with and defer to Banks in crafting language that would not create any problems for DOD. And two, actively gather opposition against the membership-generated resolutions by direct communications with those he knew would be against the resolution and by ghostwriting opposition letters from prominent DOD individuals such as Michael Gelz and Larry James. In 2008, in a highly atypical action, a membership, quote, petition resolution received sufficient support to result in a vote of APA membership on the petition. The petition provided that, quote, psychologists may not work in settings where persons are held in violation of either international law, e.g. the United Nations Convention Against Torture and the Geneva Conventions, or the U.S. Constitution, end quote. The petition passed. After this, APA formed a, quote, advisory committee to make recommendations to the town council on how to implement the petition. The advisory committee's report presented to council during February 2009 council meeting was considered a highly negative action by Banks. Banks sent a long email, largely drafted by Bankey, to a very large group of DOD and national security psychologists calling on them to oppose the advisory group's report. James was designated as the council point person, and he promptly met with Bankey to, quote, develop a battle plan of attack, in James's words. After the council meeting, James reported back to the DOD group that victory had been achieved and the resolution would have no practical effect because the word, quote, unlawful, had been inserted in the title of the resolution, and DOD had just issued an official report following a request from President Obama that Guantanamo complied with the Geneva Convention, page 44. Thus, DOD had no such, quote, unlawful facilities. In his interview with us, James said with some pride that, quote, the other side simply hadn't done its homework. Section C, conclusions regarding APA's and psychology's ties with CIA, 2001 through 2004. Section 1, overview. From 2001 through 2004, there was a great deal of interaction on issues related to interrogations between key CIA psychologists and both APA staff and prominent psychologists who were considered elder statesmen in psychology or were former or current APA presidents. These interactions were occurring precisely during the time that the CIA was using enhanced interrogation techniques, including waterboarding, in vigorous fashion against certain detainees, and had given a key role in the development and implementation of the enhanced interrogation techniques to contract psychologists Jim Mitchell and Bruce Jessen. These interactions clearly raised the question whether APA was providing direct and important support to the CIA's interrogation program and the enhanced interrogation techniques. One of the CIA psychologists who brought Mitchell and Jessen into the CIA and within whom they worked closely was Kirk Hubbard. Hubbard headed the research analysis branch of the CIA's Operational Assessment Division, a unit primarily focused on psychological assessment of spies and potential spies, and he does not appear to have been directly involved in CIA interrogations. During this time, Hubbard worked closely with the two APA staffers, Jeff Mumford and Susan Brandon, who later moved to the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, and a CIA contractor who worked for the RAND Corporation, Scott Gerwler, who put to put on a confidential conference at which academics in behavioral science could meet with national security psychologists from CIA, DOD, and the FBI on subjects like, quote, detecting deception. This was a vitally important concept to Mitchell and Jessen in implementing their apparent theory that harsh interrogation techniques can actually yield accurate information if the interrogators are able to determine when the interrogation subject is lying. Also during this time, Hubbard created a, quote, Professional Standards Advisory Committee, or PSAC, consisting of three leading outside psychologists, former APA presidents Ron Fox and Joe Matters Razzo, and former APA Division 30 hypnosis president and security-cleared CIA contractor Mel Gravitz. Mitchell and Brandon also attended at least one of the PSAC meetings, at which the focus was psychological assessment issues. Yet Matarazzo and Gravitz were also used by Hubbard and others at the CIA as consultants on a limited number of important issues to the interrogation program. For example, Matarazzo was asked to provide an opinion about whether sleep desperation constituted torture. And following a controversy within the CIA about whether Mitchell could continue to participate in interrogations, Gravitz was asked to provide a written analysis to define the ethical boundaries for psychologists participating in interrogations. In addition, Hubbard, Mitchell, and other CIA psychologists met with former APA President Martin Siegelman at his home to fully understand the psychological theory of, quote, learned helplessness, a theory that Mitchell and others at the CIA were clearly incorporating into the CIA interrogation program. Siegelman and Matarazzo also spoke at the SERE training academies with Mitchell and Jessen, where Mitchell and Jessen had been instructors, with Siegelman doing so at Hubbard and Mitchell's request. Page 45. It was also clear during this time that APA staff, principally Mumford, were keenly interested in establishing strong and lasting relationships with the CIA and were intent on trying to please Hubbard and the CIA. In one 2004 email from Mumford to Hubbard in response to Hubbard's request that Mumford not disclose Mitchell and Jessen's affiliation with the CIA, Mumford emphasized that, quote, we don't want to and won't do anything to jeopardize our harmonious working relationship. Despite the extensive interactions and APA's clear desire to please the CIA, it appears that the actual actions that APA took during this period that may have assisted the CIA in its interrogation program were limited to putting on a small number of conferences with the CIA for academics and key national security psychologists, including Hubbard, Mitchell, and Jessen. It may be that the discussions at these conferences were of great value to CIA psychologists like Mitchell and Jessen, who are alternating between A, interrogating and waterboarding detainees in secret CIA sites abroad, and B, having meetings and conferences in the U.S. on topics that might assist them in attempting to extract information through torture and other abusive interrogation techniques. But we did not find evidence that the current APA officials like Mumford and Brandon were read into or were aware in any significant way of the CIA's interrogation program, which was classified, or had meaningful knowledge of what Mitchell, Jessen, or other CIA personnel involved in the interrogations were doing. There were certainly important snippets of information in front of Mumford and Brandon that would have caused a reasonable person to suspect that Mitchell, Jessen, and others at the CIA might be engaging in abusive interrogation techniques, including detailed media reports about interrogation abuses at CIA, quote, black sites, the public disclosure of the Justice Department memos that narrowly define, quote, torture and explicitly applied to CIA interrogations, particular interest by Mitchell at the, quote, Detecting Deception Conference and the empirical evidence on the topic, and a 2003 email from Hubbard to Mumford and Brandon that Mitchell and Jessen are, quote, doing special things to special people in special places and generally are not available, end quote. But we did not find evidence that went beyond these points and found Mumford's and Brandon's denials that they knew about CIA interrogation program to be credible. CIA contract psychiatrist Andy Morgan told us that he saw no indication that APA officials were read into or received any information about the interrogation program or the interrogation activities of Mitchell, Jessen, or others. We consider Morgan a credible source of information based on his close working relationship with Hubbard and others at the CIA at the time, his knowledge of the CIA's bureaucracy and how it generally communicated internally about the interrogation program, and his opposition to the, quote, enhanced interrogation techniques portion of the CIA's interrogation program. On the other hand, as with APA officials who intentionally avoided seeking more information in the face of substantial indications of psychologists' involvement in abuses at Guantanamo, as described above, Mumford and Brandon took no steps to inquire about the clear concerns these pieces of information would have raised if their focus had been a concern about the involvement of psychologists in abusive conduct toward detainees. But this was not their focus. Instead, their focus was on building good relationships with the CIA and other government agencies and successfully acting as conduits between national security psychologists at the CIA and elsewhere and the academic psychology community that had potentially helpful expertise and research. Page 46. APA did not have the same close and long-standing relationship with the CIA as it did with the DOD, and the potential financial advantages for psychology from a close relationship with the CIA would likely have appeared smaller than with the DOD. But for APA Science Directorate and its staff, having a partnership with the CIA was of great benefit. The CIA paid tens of thousands of dollars for the expense of setting up conferences and reimbursing participants for their travel expenses, and these conferences allowed APA to showcase its relevance, visibility, and leadership on subjects of interest to psychology. Building that relationship held the promise for more CIA-funded conferences and other joint projects in the future that might similarly highlight or suggest APA's leadership and influence. Although some of the details of APA's interactions with CIA were kept secret, such as the identities of some of the people who attended the conferences, the APA Science Directorate disclosed its partnership with CIA fairly openly and in its publications to APA membership and described the title and purpose of the conferences. The APA staff created very detailed summaries of the conferences, including a list of participants and details about who said what, and circulated them broadly to all the academics and others who attended the conferences. Thus, unlike what we saw with the APA-DOD interactions in the context of the PENS task force and subsequent actions, we did not see here anything close to the level of concealment, behind-the-scenes plotting, or close coordination about APA actions, other than as to the planning of the conferences. The conferences were not open to the public, but a large variety of academics and government officials from outside the CIA, including the FBI, attended the conferences and received the summaries, so we did not conclude that there were any meaningful efforts to keep the existence or much of the content of the conferences secret. As to the actions and knowledge of the former APA officials listed above, Fox, Gravitz, Matter, Razzo, and Seligman, some of them were clearly brought closer to the circle of knowledge through important interactions with Hubbard and Mitchell, as described further below. But we did not find evidence that there was a significant link between APA and their interactions or communications with the CIA. It is a fair question whether important interactions between these very prominent former APA officials also entailed, led to, or were connected to important interactions between APA and CIA. Except for very limited instances, we did not see any evidence of this in our examination of APA emails and other documents, and in our interviews despite having found a very substantial amount of email and documentary evidence establishing important interactions between APA and government officials in other contexts, as set out above and below. On the one hand, this makes sense since prominent psychologists who were former APA presidents and board members would not necessarily think that their interactions with the CIA about these issues would call for them to contact the APA unless the CIA had specifically requested something from the APA. On the other hand, we keenly recognize that in investigating activities involving the CIA, an agency that trains people to keep things secret for a living, we are especially limited in our ability to determine definitively what occurred, and therefore we are aware that our conclusions can only be based on the evidence available to us. This is especially true when the interactions are between CIA officials and individuals who were not APA officials or employees at the time, since their emails would not necessarily have been within APA's system. Page 47. Finally, as we got deeper into our investigation and had reviewed more evidence and had a greater understanding of what we were seeing, we observed that in 2004 and 2005, during the year leading up to the Penn's task force, the APA's interactions with CIA officials on this issue slowed dramatically, and its interactions with DOD officials increased dramatically. As a result, the collaboration between APA officials and government officials regarding the Penn's process and related follow-up events was dominated by APA-DOD interactions, with no evidence of significant CIA interactions regarding Penn's. Clearly, there were important APA-CIA interactions on the topic of ethics and interrogations in 2004, including a key set of emails between Hubbard, Mumford, and Behnke, in which Hubbard indicated that Andy Morgan and Hubbard, although likely just Morgan, had concerns about activities of a national security psychologist that appeared inconsistent with the requirements of the APA ethics code. Those emails launched internal APA discussions that led to a confidential July 2004 roundtable meeting at APA on the topic for about 15 national security psychologists from the CIA, DOD, and FBI, including Hubbard, Shumate, Fain, and Gels, and some academics and APA staffers, including Behnke, which in turn was the precursor of the Penn's task force. However, after this July 2004 meeting, we saw no evidence of follow-up discussions with Hubbard or the CIA on the topic, and no apparent CIA interest in the Penn's task force in the evidence we reviewed. Likely explanations for this are that, one, Hubbard, APA's staff main point of contact at the CIA, retired from the CIA in April of 2005, 2 months before Penn's, leaving APA staff with no significant contact at the CIA. And two, the CIA's enhanced interrogation program was apparently in its waning days by late 2004, early 2005, according to the 2014 Senate Intelligence Committee report. Footnote 23. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence Committee Study of the Central Intelligence Agency's Detention and Interrogation Program, 113th Congress, 143, published 2014. Quote, in the fall of 2004, CIA officers began considering, quote, end games or final disposition of detainees in CIA custody, dot, dot, dot. By the end of 2004, dot, 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 most of the detainees remaining in CIA custody were no longer undergoing active interrogations. Rather, they were infrequently questioned and awaiting a final disposition. Back to the report, page 47. One potential exception to this participation of observer, Mel Grabitz at the Penn's task force meeting. Grabitz, who is approximately 90 and refused several requests for an interview, had worked as a contractor for years for the CIA. A leading expert on hypnosis and considered by some the founder of operational psychology, it is conceivable that Grabitz was at the task force in order to advance some interest of the CIA in the result of Penn's, and was communicating with CIA officials in advance of and during Penn's. However, we have seen no evidence of this, and it seems unlikely to us in light of what appears to be the very limited role Gravitz played in PENS and the absence of other visible APA-CIA communications, which we would expect to have been apparent as based on our visibility into the substantial communications between Hubbard and APA. On the other hand, as set out in detailed PENS section below, Gravitz contributed a small suggested paragraph to the draft PENS report regarding the recommendation that research be encouraged, and he had a prior relationship with Behnke. Page 48. We know that some of the most significant critics of APA, who have had access to the emails of the RAND employee and CIA contractor Scott Gruer, now deceased, which revealed frequent emails with Hubbard, Mumford, and Brandon, have posited that there must have been significant CIA influence regarding the outcome of the PENS task force in light of the substantial APA-CIA interactions shown in these emails and highly suspect content of the PENS report. Without the same access we had to APA emails and documents showing extensive APA-DOD collaboration in and after the time of the PENS task force, this is an understandable inference once one reaches the conclusion that the PENS task force can only be explained by some sort of governmental influence. But with the benefit of the additional information discovered in our investigation, one can understand more clearly how very substantial APA-CI interaction in 2001 to 2004 time period did not lead to substantial CIA interactions with APA in relation to the PENS task force. Section 2. It appears that the relationship between APA staff and Hubbard began as a result of the proactive effort by the science directorate shortly after 9/11 to reach out and offer assistance from psychological science to government agencies involved in counterterrorism, principally the FBI and the CIA, and eventually the Department of Homeland Security as well. Mumford, the head of the government relations for the science directorate, asked Brandon, a relatively new science fellow at APA, a 1 to 2 year position, who had been a psychology researcher at Yale, to work on making the connection and setting up meetings. Kelly, a subordinate to Mumford, who was generally in charge of government relations with DOD for the science directorate, was also involved. This outreach led to discussions with Steve Bann, chief of the FBI Behavioral Science Unit at the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia, about organizing a counterterrorism conference at which law enforcement and intelligence personnel would come together with academics and researchers to brainstorm and compare ideas. The result was a February 2002 conference at the FBI Academy called, quote, Countering Terrorism, Integration of Theory and Practice. That was attended by about 70 people, including Hubbard, Mitchell, and other CIA personnel, FBI personnel, other federal officials, state and local law enforcement personnel, a wide variety of academics, and APA staffers, including Mumford, Kelly, Brandon, and Behnke. Brandon and Mumford produced a 50-page summary that listed the participants and the different, quote, scenarios that were discussed by smaller groups. A small amount of the document discussed interrogation and interview techniques, but there is no reference to physical or aggressive or disorientation techniques that might be used to get a non-compliant person to talk. I'm going to leave it there for tonight and pick up again tomorrow in finishing the reading of the executive summary of the Hoffman Report. I'm going to also try to edit out the first 35 minutes of this so that nobody's listening to just dead air. I apologize for any inconvenience, and I do look forward to continuing this and then opening up the lines for people to add comment and thought about this, and hopefully maybe some special guests will consider joining the show to talk about the more relevant issues and what prompted this concerning Olivia Moorhead Slaughter's role as the non-voting chair of the Pens Task Force and her new role as the president-elect of the Division 35 of the Society for Psychology of Women of the American Psychological Association, of which I am learning I am not alone in opposing. So I will welcome your comments and your feedback, and I look forward to more in the near future. Till next time, talk with you soon.